Hey, everybody, what's happening? You're listening to Tony Todd, the voice from Zoom on The Flash and many, many others, Dead of Summer, Freeform Channel. You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Outrageous life.
Hey there, fanboys and fangirls around the world. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I am your host, Joe Stuber, mere moments away from taking you on a terrific adventure. So much good stuff on tap for you today. But before I get to my adventure at this year's Terrific Con, I do want to mention there was a bonus episode of Comic Book Central this week. If you're on the Facebook page, if you like Comic Book Central on Facebook or Twitter, you know all about it. iTunes, if you subscribe on iTunes, you got it that way. Hope you caught it. Indiana Jones fans in Ohio, it is Raiders of the Lost Ark in concert September 3rd and 4th, Cleveland Orchestra, Blossom Music Center. I go behind the scenes with Ilya Gedalovich, artistic administrator for the Cleveland Orchestra, and the conductor of Raiders in concert, Brett Mitchell. We also talk about Brett's upcoming Superman concert in Cleveland. That's going to be fun. If you're in Ohio and you're hearing this in time, get your tickets now, clevelandorchestra.com. Or if you just want to hear some cool indie and Superman music talk, check out the last episode of Comic Book Central. On the website, it's comicbookcentral.net. On Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Twitter, @comicbookctrl. Again, subscribe to Comic Book Central on iTunes or Stitcher. You check it out. Man, if you subscribe to the show, you are definitely one of the cool kids because you got it automatically. Blueberry, it's there as well. So that's a bonus episode that you got this week. Hope you had a chance to check it out. If you haven't, be sure to check it out after today's show. All right, on to today's show. It is my treasury-sized, epic, multi-part adventure at Terrificon. The show took place a few weeks back at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. Amazing venue, I'm telling you. And if these episodes get you stoked for comic creators, celebrities, crazy cool stuff that's going on, cosplay, I'll say this, plans are well underway for next year's Terrificon. It's terrificon.com. Check it out. That's where you're going to find out what you need to know about next year's show. For this year's show, man, I am telling you, I had an incredible time at Terrificon. Always do. Been there the last few years. Previously brought you some two-part adventures, so be sure to check those out if you haven't already. But this year, man, way too much content to be contained by only two episodes. So I am proclaiming this Terrificon week here in the lair. Over the next week, you're going to get five, count them, five episodes of Comic Book Central. Today's show, you're going to hear some quick hits with some cool cats bringing cool stuff to the show. I caught up with some celebrities, some very familiar voices to Comic Book Central. You're going to hear those again. You're going to hear my Q&A with Gotham's Cameron B. Condova. Man, that is all coming at you today. Now, what's coming at you next week? Glad you asked. You're going to hear from artist and animator Rick Hoberg. Rick worked on some of our favorite shows like Super Friends, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, a bunch of other stuff with friends, all kinds of cool stuff. I also celebrate 25 years of Ren and Stimpy with Ren and Stimpy co-creator Bob Camp. You're going to catch up with friends of the show, Sam Jones from Flash Gordon and John Wesley Shipp, talking about his new role as Jay Garrick on The Flash. Those are coming up. Again, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're going to get all of that goodness headed your way. And be sure to share the lair with your friends and family on social media. Get these episodes out, friends. Don't keep them to yourselves. All right. Hey, speaking of social media, something new for Comic Book Central this year. I got to do a bunch of Facebook live hits. That was fun. I kind of field tested it right before the trip. Had a chance to post some things at Terrificon this year. Worked out great. Hopefully you caught those on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. They're still there. Sam Jones, he did his first Facebook live on Comic Book Central. The gents from the Secret Identity podcast, Brian and Matt. Tony Todd, his first Facebook live. Actor Tony Todd, you're going to hear that in just a bit. I'll play a little bit of that for you. Terrificon's Big Cheese, Mitch Halleck, caught up with Mitch. Not an easy thing to do at the show to catch up with Mitch, but we did a Facebook Live. By the way, huge thanks to Mitch for putting all this together. It's an incredible amount of work. He's planning next year's show right now. That's how it takes the full year to put it together. Bigger and better every year. It would not happen without Mitch and his crew and all the volunteers, an army of people working on this. all working together to put together one amazing show. Incredible comments are coming back about it. So can't say enough about those fine folks. Also want to give a shout out to some of the media outlets who are posting video of the Q&As. They were there covering the event all weekend. Some of them, The Dorkening, The Dork Times, a lot of dorks out there, a lot of geeks, nerds, dorks, all of us. Angry Geeks, they were out there as well. So be sure to check out all of their YouTube channels. Also be sure to like Terrificon on Facebook. News, reviews, videos, pictures, they're all being posted there on Facebook. You really get a whole feeling for the show. You get there, you check them out on social media. All right, enough jibber jabber for today. Time to get to the cool stuff. There was plenty of cool stuff at Terrificon. I'm not kidding. A full-scale Hulkbuster was there. Not only that, but Arrow's Katrina Law, she was there. She got to get down and have a dance party with the Hulkbuster and some of her fans. That video is floating out there on YouTube. By the way, speaking of Katrina Law, got a chance to say hi to her. Stay tuned to Comic Book Central. Just saying, working on something for you. Stay tuned. Subscribe on iTunes. More cool stuff at the show. The Batmobile from the 1989 Tim Burton flick. That was parked on site. One of the actual ones that was used in the movie. You can see a picture of it on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. And it was not the only cool car cruising around Terrificon. Oh no, true believers. There was a lot going on. In fact, I caught up with a couple of the guys. Well, a guy and Caesar from Planet of the Apes. Trust me, it made sense if you were there. They wheeled in one of the wildest, craziest, spectacularly spideriest rides straight out of Marvel Comics from the swinging 70s. Check it out.
All right, I'm here with Wes.
Yep.
Wes Bryan. Yep. And yep. Tim Riley. It's hard to recognize Tim because Tim doesn't look, I'm guessing, like he usually does.
No, pretty close.
Okay, describe for our listeners what Tim is showing up as today.
I'm Caesar from Planet of the Apes.
We're doing a lot of Planet of the Apes on Comic Book Central. So, yeah, I actually got to meet up with Caesar. But something else a little more interesting here, too. I've never even seen one of these before. You actually created the Spider-Mobile.
We did.
From the 70s. This is one of my... It's one of the most controversial vehicles probably ever in the history of comics. It's often talked of as being cheesy. I love it, but I was six at the time that it came out.
Yeah.
What inspired you to recreate the Spider-Mobile, which is very, very cool?
We actually built the Doom Buggy itself from scratch over the course of a few years. And then Mitch Halleck, that's running the show here, was, I guess, joking or whatever, and said, wouldn't that be great if somebody made a Spider-Mobile?
So you had the Doom Buggy, so it wasn't, you hadn't thought about the Spider-Mobile. No. So this goes back to Mitch now.
Yep, it does.
There's always a comic aspect when Mitch is involved. So what went into the process of actually building the Spider-Mobile? Like, did you have to go back to the comics and look at every little angle, or what did you do?
We downloaded as many pictures as we could from the comics. You know, there's not that many reference photos.
It didn't last long.
Yeah, it was only two issues, and it was only a few frames, I guess. And, we already had the red base. Yeah, you know, he had it painted red. But hadn't used it in a while. And Mitch had posted online, hey, wouldn't it be great to have something like this show up? I was like, I know a guy. So I talked to Wes, and he's a big comic collector from, you know, going on years.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, yeah, what do you think? You think we could do it? Why not?
I'd say you guys did it. I mean, it looks amazing. The controversy, too, is comes up, like, why would Spider-Man need a car? I mean, that was the whole thing. It was like they were selling the Mego toy. Do you guys have the Mego spider car at all?
No,
did you look at that? Okay, I didn't know if you used that.
I have the two comics that it's actually on the cover of, but I forgot to bring them today. I'll have them tomorrow.
You have them bring it? Yeah.
But that's pretty much what we went by, is just the pictures from the comic.
No, I think
it's actually a different style body, so it's... We couldn't make it exactly the same.
Right, it looks pretty good, yeah. And if I remember right, it didn't have, like, web shooters somewhere on it. Did you guys try to trick it out with web shooters at all? Or is that, like, the phase two of the Spider-Mobile? Yeah.
We did this in...
One night a week for maybe 2 months.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, so for our listeners, who give us a sense of what it looks like. For listeners who haven't seen it yet. And we'll put some pictures up of it, but...
Well, it's your typical 70s era Doom Buggy. We update, you know, larger tires. And, you know, it's street legal.
Okay.
It's 100% street legal.
Did you drive? You drove it here?
No, we had to trailer it.
Okay.
just to want
to
make sure.
How cool would that be to see that coming down the road?
Just to make sure it would get here.
Yeah. And then you got the steering wheel is tricked out?
Yeah, we got a cover with the Spider logo on the steering wheel, on the floor mats. We put a couple decals on.
the shift knob,
the shift knob,
keychain.
Okay.
Tomorrow or Sunday we'll have. Well, tomorrow we'll have Spider Pig.
Nice. Okay. Well, the question is, have you had any Spider-Man cosplayers come in and jump in the thing yet?
We had one, but he had nowhere to carry his camera with, so he was going to get his friend.
He's just a web it and have it on his backpack or something, I think, if I remember right. Well, you guys did an amazing job. How can listeners find out more about you guys and what you do? Are you on social media?
We're both on Facebook. Tim Wiley on Facebook.
Just look for Planet of the Apes stuff, I'm guessing.
What
was the behind the Planet of the Apes inspired getup?
A friend of mine made the mask.
Okay.
She's from Canada.
Okay.
She made the mask. She's actually made a few of them, a few newer ones. I bought this from her, then I put the rest of the outfit together. Yeah, I've always liked Planet of the Apes. Yeah,
it looks good.
Classic movies. Well, thank you.
Okay. And where are you on social media?
I'm just on Facebook, Wes Bryan.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, find out. And we got to see Caesar in the Spider-Mobile, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think we can do that.
Okay. Okay, Stuberman, Caesar from Planet of the Apes, in the Spider-Mobile. The Spider-Mobile was actually brought to life from the pages of the amazing Spider-Man comic. Kudos, good sirs. It was amazing. It was only a Terrificon. You can catch the visual on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. One of the coolest rides ever made. That was pretty fun. All right, a lot of 50th anniversaries this year. 66 was big. Star Trek, of course. Batman 66. I'm telling you, Batman 66, well represented at Terrificon this year with a batastic display. Dave Silva was there. Longtime listeners of Comic Book Central, as well as listeners of the IndieCast, know that Dave usually brings these spot-on recreations of iconic Indiana Jones set pieces. He's always bringing something cool there. This year, a little bit different. He went off the Indiana Jones theme. He created something that gave every fan in attendance a fantastic bat memory. And Dave was joined by a very familiar face at Terrificon, a man who bears an uncanny resemblance to Adam West's Batman 66, the Cape Crusader, Bob DeSimone. Regular listeners know, especially IndieCast listeners know, you've previously here at Terrificon brought in some Indiana Jones stuff. You had the Chachapoyan Temple. Last year you had the Well of the Souls. I thought we were going to do a little bit more Indiana Jones stuff, but you went full on comic book this year.
Yep.
Okay, for our listeners, tell them what we have here, what we're looking at.
We've got the reenactment of the 1966 television series Batman Wall Climb. And basically, you take pictures with Batman climbing the wall.
So this, when you see the show and they're climbing up the wall and the little cameos, yep. The celebrities yep. pop up, you get to actually do that here.
Yep.
It's very cool.
I have the curious feeling this is all some kind of literary plot.
Let's outwit him, Batman. Let's refuse to bite.
We must, Robin. It's the only
way. Batman? Oh, you must be, because that's Robin. Hi, Robin.
Yes, citizen, but don't be alarmed. We're here on official business.
Holy human flies.
And you weren't content enough to just have the wall. You've got a little bit of live-action assistance here from the Cape Crusader himself. It's Batman, everybody.
How are you, everybody? We have a great attraction here at Terrificon. You get to climb the iconic Batman climb up the wall. So come on down and take a climb with Batman.
We get to fight crime along with Batman. We get to be sort of Robin. Because Robin's not here.
Right.
No. So huge Batman 66 renaissance going on right now. 50th anniversary of the original TV series. Just announced. I mean, I know this is going to be weeks after, but just announced Batman... the animated movie featuring Adam West and Burt Ward. You're going to be going back into action.
That's
great. You're going to go fight crime again.
I can't wait. It's, the bright knight needs to make his resurgence.
Yes.
And, it's great to see so many younger people recognizing the character with the release of the Blu-rays coming out and now this animated feature coming out. All of the toys coming out now. So it's just great to have this character. That everybody has loved for so long.
I think there's been so many dark movies now that people can finally embrace the sort of pop culture madness of this. Plus, they got all the legal wranglings worked out, so now you can get all these toys and DVDs and Blu-ray stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so you've got the Batman. I mean, what are fans saying when they're coming in and getting to climb walls with Batman?
Wow, that's cool. That's what I've heard most of the day. Wow, that's really cool.
This is a very cool attraction that you're going on here, and you've got What else? You get like a wind machine that's kind of like, yep, so the cape blows around. Yep. You get the Batman music playing in the background. Mm-hmm. You've got the bat phone. Mm-hmm. If you need to take a call and go fight crime, Cape Crusader, you know,
that's
it's
right,
there.
You're in touch with them.
So great stuff. And yeah, really cool part of Trivicon. So glad you could both join us today.
Great. Thank you.
Again, be sure to check out my Trivicon photo album on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. I'm going to get that up ASAP. If it's not right there when you're listening to this episode on the premiere date, just give me a day or so. I'm getting those things up there. I'm going to link that as well to the Twitter feed as well. So just follow on Twitter. You're going to get it whenever I post it there. You'll see me climbing the wall, fighting crime alongside the Cape Crusader. It was fun. Big thanks to Dave Silva and the man behind the cowl, Bob DeSimone, for creating a memorable bat experience for each and every fan at Trivicon. That was fun, gents. All right, who else was there? AMC's Comic Book Men, they were at the show as well. Of course, Kevin Smith, he put on a 3.5-hour live show at the Mohegan Sun. His fellow geeks, Ming Chen, Mike Zapsik, Brian Johnson from the show, they were there all weekend long, greeting and partying with the fans. I caught up with Ming for one of several Facebook Live hits I was telling you about. I posted those over the weekend. If you didn't catch it live at the time, here it is, with a guest appearance by Mike Zapsik.
Comic Book Central at Trivicon. Look who showed up here.
Yeah.
A friend of the show, Ming Chen.
Look who showed up. This is my fifth year at Trivicon.
It's terrific.
Yes.
It is terrific.
I've been at this con. This is my fifth year. I keep coming back. It's great.
And you're here. We got the Comic Book Man.
Yeah. It's Brian Johnson. There's Mike Zapsik. We got Mike Zapsik's special hot sauce here. Look at that.
It's for sale. There's a lot you guys got going on, too. You have a party? Coming up later on tonight?
After party tonight, Riverview Garage rooftop. Yeah, it'll be awesome.
Comic Book Man coming up. Look at this. We got a special
cameo. Man, get back to work.
Oh, man. Sorry.
Who's watching the store?
Oh, my God. Walt Flanagan.
When do we get the premiere? Let's see. You guys.
October 23rd, when Walking Dead comes back. That's all you need to know.
I think there's something similar that we have here. You got a special guest coming up. I just had on the show a few weeks ago. The Bionic Woman.
Yeah. Yes.
Is going to be coming up. I talked to Lindsay Wagner a few weeks ago.
She spoiled it?
She did not spoil it coming up, not on my show, but we will definitely promote it on Comic Book Central. She actually has an event in Florida.
So we
talked to her about
that.
Dude. But yeah, we'll promote.
I said get back to work.
Oh, so she talked about us. Did she say anything about me?
No.
Oh, sorry. No.
Well, the restraining order is still in effect, though.
Right. Okay.
I think that was the only thing.
And she tried to rip my arms off, so yeah.
She could do it. She could do it. Well, all right, so we got the party now. You guys are here all weekend?
All weekend.
You guys have a Q&A coming up?
2 o'clock, yes. 2 p.m. Today.
So get down to Trivicon. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
October 23rd, that is when Season 6 of Comic Book Men premieres on AMC. Thanks again to Ming for taking some time to chat with me at the convention. If you want to hear a little bit more from Ming, the show, The Secret Stash, you can check it out during my 2015 visit to Trivicon. I stopped by the comic book store. It was a Secret Stash in Red Bank, New Jersey. I drove by there on the way home. So talked to Ming there. That was back on episode 93. So if you haven't heard that, check it out after you listen to today's show. One of the most terrific aspects of Trivicon is that not only are guests there from the world of television and movies, but it is the convention that never forgets that all of this started with the comic books themselves. Always an amazing amount of artists, writers, and editors there to meet and greet the fans. This year was no exception. Tons of folks there. I caught up with one of them, Peter David, writer Peter David. Now, Peter, of course, famous for his award-winning 12-year run on The Incredible Hulk. Also, so many Star Trek stories he's written over the years. Hey, 50 years of Star Trek, great time to chat with the great Peter David. Here at Trivicon with Peter David, who has written just about everything. I mean, is there anything you haven't written at this point? Anything that you'd want to write that you haven't written?
I actually never answer that question because...
We're starting off well.
No. There's specific reason for that. If I say, oh, sure, I'd love to write such and such a character, invariably what that turns into is Peter David is saying he doesn't like what the current person currently doing that character is doing, and he wants to take it over.
I'll rephrase it. How about like a classic character? And we think about, you know, like maybe go back to like maybe Tarzan or something, or some old serials.
I actually kind of did do Tarzan. I did a Phantom limited series for Hermes Press, and I'd always said that my dream project would be Tarzan meets the Phantom, the two major jungle heroes.
Okay.
And my editor said, I can totally arrange that with the Edgar Rice Burroughs people. And I said, fantastic. And then the Edgar Rice Burroughs people wanted insane amounts of money, so that fell apart. But I wound up writing the story anyway. I took a character who had not shown up in the Phantom since the very earliest days, a guy named Jimmy Wells, and postulated that he was a Tarzan-like character.
Okay.
Originally, Jimmy Wells was supposed to be the Phantom before Lee Falk actually came up with his identity. And Jimmy disappeared from the series. So he now shows up in my comic book in a Tarzan-like capacity, and I got to tell the Phantom Tarzan story I always wanted to.
Okay, this one, we're digging deep on this one then. So where can we find this? This one is...
Oh, it's in the comic book stores. Hermes Press.
Okay.
Drawn by Sal Velludo, and it's now actually available in trade paperback and hardcover.
Nice. Okay, I'm going to have to go check this out. Because you see, like, Michael Uslan does, you know, he's doing Greenhorn Lone Ranger now. So,
right.
Like, you just kind of these mashups. So that'd be very cool. So maybe that's something... Well, they're doing Tarzan movies now again, so maybe that's something in the future.
One never knows.
Celebrating Star Trek 50th all year on Comic Book Central here.
Yes.
You certainly have written many different Star Trek stories. Does anyone stand out as your particular favorite? I know they're fan favorites. Does anyone that you looked at and went, boy, that's the one that I'm
still
proud of?
I still feel loyalty to the original group. Aside from the fact that I've met all of them, that I wrote the autobiography of one of them, that I went to another one's wedding... you know, despite all these personal attachments, it's also just a matter of that I really think that the Kirk-Spock-McCoy triangle has never really been matched in all of Star Trek's later iterations. I mean, on the one side, you had Spock as the incarnation of the brain. On the other side, you had McCoy as the incarnation of the heart. And in the middle of them, Kirk, the everyman, trying to balance their arguments and come up with the best way in which to proceed. No one has ever really captured the pure essence of the human mind the way that original Star Trek did, in my opinion.
Is that the key for you as a writer, to get that dynamic, to give you the conflict that you need to go into it with? I mean, is that like sort of that, those three give you some of the best stories to come out of?
I actually was just talking about in terms of shows I like to watch.
Oh, just sitting back with a bowl of popcorn.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so there's a lot of Star Trek going on now. We've got the movies.
Yes.
What's your take on the movies?
I liked the first one. I know some people did not, but I liked the first one. It had plot holes you could drive a Buick through, but I liked the first one. Second one I was not really all that thrilled with, for no other reason than that you've got Khan, Noonien, and Singh as being played by a white British guy. I mean, come on. Seriously?
Well, the problem I had was I liked it better when it was called Star Trek 2.
Well, yeah, that was the other aspect.
Why'd we do it? Yeah.
But I love Trek 3. I thought that was the best of the three.
Yeah.
What upsets me is that of the three, it's doing the most poorly at the box office.
That's what I can't figure. Now, do you think it's just because there's just so much at the box office right now that's competing for everybody's $10 and $15?
No, I think people just really didn't like Star Trek Into Darkness that much.
Oh, and that was...
And so not inclined to give Abrams' crew another shot.
Okay.
I think that was a mistake, though, because the third one's definitely the best.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it, too. New Star Trek show coming out.
Yes.
Are you going to be getting back into the world of Star Trek? Can we expect some screenplays? Can we explain anything like that? Would you be interested in?
Well, sure, but nobody's contacted me.
Okay.
Nobody's gotten in touch with me about writing for the new series. I wasn't planning on watching it because I don't like the idea of having to pay $7 a month to CBS.
CBS,
I mean,
All Access. Yeah.
Yes, granted, it's only
unless you live in another country and you can get it free on Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
You have Netflix.
I mean, granted, it's seven. It's only $7, but you know what? Screw it. I pay my cable bill. I pay for Netflix. It's enough. It's freaking enough. I pay enough money for video entertainment. I'm not going to give CBS $7 a month.
Maybe if you write a screenplay, maybe you write a script, you get, they'll give you a CBS All Access free. They'll give you a code.
They'll
give you the password.
I'd be fine with that.
What would you like to do? Is there a Star Trek story that you have in you that you want to tell that might be fleshed out, depending on how these characters kind of shake out.
Well, I mean, I have no idea what the show's going to be about, I mean, aside from what's been released, so I don't really have any particular opinions. I haven't been giving it any thought. I mean, if people want to pay me to write stuff, then I give it a great deal of thought. But if they're not paying me to write stuff, then I just don't think about it at all.
I would imagine. Well, maybe it'll be very cool. Maybe we'll see another Star Trek story out of you.
Maybe.
Peter David, thank you so much for joining me on Comic
Book
Central.
You're very welcome.
You can get all six issues of Peter David's The Phantom at the Hermes Press website. And looks like this January, the trade paperback is going to be available collecting all six issues. I saw that on Amazon. It was listing it as January. So be sure to check out Hermes Press website or Amazon and get Peter's take on the Phantom and kind of Tarzan. There you go. All right. From Star Trek Deep Space Nine and a bajillion other projects, actor René Auberjonois. Hey, friend of the show. He was my guest on episode 124. He was at Terrificon this year. Got a chance to meet him in person. Star Trek's 50th. You got to swing by and talk to René Auberjonois.
All right, so just catching up here with René Auberjonois, friend of the show. So glad you were able to join me for that in-depth interview a few months back.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great interview. Thank you
very much. Well, you were the one being interviewed, so it's easy when you've got great source material to work with. Is this your first time at Terrificon?
It sure is. My goodness, it is terrific.
Okay.
Isn't it?
It is pretty amazing. I know you're just starting off, you're just getting the table set up, but what's kind of the fan reaction you're getting? Because I know you've been to a bunch of conventions this year, Star Trek 50th especially right now.
Yeah, because of the Star Trek 50th, there are a lot of conventions. This is not specifically for Star Trek, which means, you know, there are a lot of wonderful people wandering around, but they're not specifically here for Star Trek. So it's a little easier, you know, not quite as hectic. I just spent 5 days in Las Vegas for the 50th anniversary.
That was the Star Trek event.
And that was huge.
Craziest fan reaction you're getting as you're coming up? Like, what, I mean, most memorable, craziest?
Well, you know what's the weirdest thing to me is that many people are coming up and talking about Benson, that TV show that I did decades ago.
Yeah.
And so I'm amazed that, but I have a feeling it must be replaying. Because there seems to be, you know, I could have, a few years ago, I could have sat here all weekend and nobody would have ever mentioned Benson. But now...
How do you discuss it? Because, like, do you even remember episodes? Or, like, just experiences working with Robert Guillaume? And
yeah, I remember, of course, the brilliant Robert Guillaume. Yeah. And I remember the friends that I made on it. Ethan Phillips, who I called Johnny. Johnny Phillips, who played Pete, and then Neelix on Star Trek Voyager, remains one of my dearest friends. And every once in a while, he'll turn to me. We'll be having dinner or walking around something, and he'll start chuckling, and I'll say, "What?" And he'll say, "I was just thinking about episode 156. Well, you know. Who the hell
can remember?
No, he's kidding.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, it's great. I have not seen an episode of Benson since we finished shooting it in, oh my God, 1986.
Do you ever get used to that, though? Because we live with this stuff. We watch Star Trek over and over. We go on Netflix. We binge watch them over and over.
Yeah.
We remember, we get the comic books. We ask you about it. Do you ever get used to that, or do you just... You know, how do you kind of process that? It's got to be overwhelming for someone with such a body of work.
Well, you know,
or do you just make stuff up?
I'm an old character.
You're just making up stories now.
I'm an old leathery character actor, and so I just, I try not to take it for granted. It's a great gift, especially because, as I think we spoke about in our interview, I do this essentially to raise money for Doctors Without Borders. And it's a great organization, a great charity. And so I'm very deeply appreciated whenever the fans are generous enough to support that. You know, Star Trek is the gift that keeps on giving.
With all the new versions of it, the films, and now they're going to be,
Well, that's the thing. Is it going to keep on giving? Because there's a new TV show out, and you're sitting right next to your buddy Tony Todd here.
Yeah.
Look, nobody ever dies in Star Trek. Everybody comes back.
Well, we
know that you were kind of in that era in the movie. You played a character in the movie, too. Any chance we could see you in the new Star Trek?
No.
No?
Nah, don't hold your breath. But the fact is, the new Star Trek has regenerated, brought new fans, younger fans into it, and young people who might not have ever watched Deep Space Nine, which, it's a number of years now. They're now it's on Netflix. The number of people who come up to me and tell me that they're streaming it now, that's a gift. So I'm very grateful.
What are you working on now? You've got the movie that your son directed?
Movie that my son directed, Bloodstripe. I've also got the hiccups, but I don't get paid for that. I did the film for our son, Remy, which he wrote and directed. And in October, actually, October 3rd, a movie that I did with Michelle Williams, Kristen Stewart, and Laura Dern is opening in New York.
You need to get some Spider-Man stuff out here.
Wow.
We need to get the Spider-Man Raw comic. You are Spider-Man.
I know.
You will always be Spider-Man.
I was the voice of Spider-Man.
That's right. We need to get that Raw comic here. Renee, thank you so much for joining
Thanks,
me. I appreciate
man.
It.
Good to see
Have
you.
Have a great weekend.
As soon as we were done chatting there, a woman approached Renee's table. She said she was a huge fan. First thing she said, loved you on Benson. He turned to me and said, see, Benson. All right, there you go. Can't deny it's a quality show featuring a top-notch actor, Renee Auberjonois. If you haven't heard my in-depth interview with Renee, be sure after today's show to take a listen to episode 124 of Comic Book Central. You're going to love it. Also, The Dork Times, I mentioned them earlier, they have the entire Renee Auberjonois, Tony Todd, Star Trek, Terrificon, Q&A online. The video's there. Check it out on the YouTube channel. Good stuff there. All right, Tony Todd. We mentioned Tony Todd, the great actor. As you heard, he's at the very next table from Renee. So not only Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Horror fans know him as Candyman. Comic book fans, man, last year was fun. He was the terrifying voice of Zoom on The Flash last season. One of my Facebook Lives from the show. I did one with Tony that was his first Facebook Live as well. Here it is if you didn't catch it online.
Comic Book Central Live again from Terrificon. Look who showed up.
Wait a minute. What is this? Is this Facebook Live?
This is your first one,
my
too.
God, it's my first time. What's
you
happening?
And Sam Jones is your first Facebook Live.
So how does this reach out to everybody that's on Facebook?
This is going out to everybody that's on my Facebook page on Comic Book Central. Yeah.
Terrific.
So I'm awesome. Here. I'm here with Tony Todd. Man, Zoom.
The
voice. Give us a little bit of Zoom.
I am the fastest man alive.
Okay, that actually did just give me chills right there.
So happy to be here. I know that you're from Ohio.
I am from Ohio, that's correct.
And we're in my home state, Connecticut, which is where I grew up, learned everything I know about fishing, boy scouting, acting, and life in general.
Man,
so it's good to be back here. And record collecting. I'm a huge vinyl guy.
And we're
going
to
be... all you people Spotifying and all that streaming stuff, there's nothing like going to a record bin, putting your little fingers through the record in the vinyl and pulling out that one you wanted all your life.
Speaking of vinyl, you're right next to the Spider-Man vinyl. Right. Did you know that your buddy Renee Auberjonois was Spider-Man back in the day on a vinyl record?
No, I did not. On a vinyl record, like playing, voicing it?
Like you put, he was Spider-Man.
Unbelievable.
He was actually Spider-Man. Yep.
Awesome.
He was on Comic Book Central. Looking forward to an in-depth interview with you on Comic Book Central coming up.
I can't wait for that.
You've got a Q&A.
Details.
We're going to get into some details. You are having a Q&A with Renee.
With Renee on Sunday, I believe.
Sunday,
right?
I believe it is. So, yeah, come on down.
You're
get your
the, you're going to be in the panel for that.
I won't be on. I'll be in the audience. I might ask you some questions.
Okay,
I might get. I may. Preview
and
that
anybody
too.
Out there that's in the Connecticut area, come on down and check us out at Terrificon and the Mohegan Sun Casino.
That's it. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Tony Todd fans out there, and who is not a Tony Todd fan? We're all Tony Todd fans. Stay tuned to Comic Book Central again. I'm telling you, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. I'm scheduling an in-depth conversation with Tony as we speak. That's going to be an upcoming episode. Man, it's going to be good. Stay tuned for that. All right, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 1. We know it. We love it. It took the box office by storm. Volume 2 is going to be doing the same thing next May. Actor Sean Gunn, he was at Terrificon as well. Sean, of course, he plays Kraglin in the series. He's also the stand-in for Rocket Raccoon and Thanos on the set when his brother James Gunn is directing and the crew's trying to shoot all the actors and get them interacting with these computer-generated characters. So Sean steps in on set for that, gives them something to work off of. If you catch the extras on Blu-ray, you're going to see some of Sean's incredible work that he does. I caught up with him at the show, talked to him about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. See if he could give us a little behind-the-scenes vibe on it. Here it is.
Talking with Sean Gunn.
Hello.
First time at Terrificon?
First time in Connecticut, really, wow. Other than driving through.
Okay.
I'm not a resident of Connecticut, but I play one on TV.
Okay. I had a chance to interview Michael Rooker a little while ago in Cleveland.
Sorry about that.
It was fine. He was on his best behavior. I asked him about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He pretty much just stared at me.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you the same thing. I think there's a little bit more in the can right now than maybe when he was shooting it.
Oh, it's all in the can now. We finished shooting in the third week of June, I believe, and they're like crazy in the middle of post. It's, you know,
okay.
It's things are going very well from what I understand.
So you're reprising your role as Kraglin.
I am indeed.
You got to work with Michael Rooker.
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Give me your best family-friendly Michael Rooker story. Can you do that? Is that even a possibility?
Can I use the word buttocks?
Is
that family-friendly?
You may use the word buttocks, yes.
So,
I'm obsessed with Match Game, so anything from the 1970s show Match Game, you're pretty much safe.
So two actors, Dave Bautista and Palm Clemente, it was in the rehearsal process just about a week or so before we started shooting. And they were rehearsing this really intense dramatic scene, and we were rehearsing in this gymnasium, and the door has a little window on it, and right when they're at the climax of their scene, they all look up, and Rooker is pressed his buttocks against the window, and everyone started, you know, retching and vomiting, of course. And
it's kind of really, tough to get really back dynamite. Into character after that, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'll say.
I mean, it's just, it kind of causes a problem for the production crew, for everybody that's involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Toughest challenge for you taking direction from your brother. You older or younger?
I'm younger.
Okay. So there's a little bit of history of taking some direction, I'm guessing, growing up.
A lot of history. Okay. We've been kind of working together in one capacity or another since we were kids.
Okay.
I honestly, taking direction from my brother is easier than taking direction from anyone else that I work with because we've worked together so much and for so long that we have a shorthand of dealing with one another. So I think the shortest distance between what he wants and what I'm giving him is, it's generally a quick note here or there. I have a very good sense for when he's getting what he wants.
Is there ever a time when you kind of like, you kind of, well, maybe we should do it this way, and then, like, you give him a look or something, he can kind of tell, like, okay, what are you feeling?
If we're not exactly on the same page about a scene, we either get on the same page very quickly, or we shoot it both ways. We're never so far apart that it's drastically different. But every now and then I'll say, let's do a take where I do it this way. And he'll say, cool. Or, you know, let's shoot it this way first. It's very loose, you know. We trust one another a great deal in our respective roles, him as director and me as actor. So I actually love working with my brother. If I could do every movie with him, I probably would.
Did you get to do any more of Rocket Raccoon, maybe Thanos? I mean, did you get to do some of that sort of standing in, added in post kind of stuff, or is it straight up live action?
Right, yeah. What I do for Rocket is I essentially just play Rocket on set,
yeah.
And then I do the motion reference for a lot of Rocket's movement, primarily his face. Facial expressions in his hands.
You got to do that again this time?
And I did that again on this movie. It's a lot of work. But it's really rewarding. It's, you know, there's a team of people that create Rocket, and I am one important member of that team.
Other than Guardians, what do you have coming up, and how can fans find out more about it?
I also did the reboot of Gilmore Girls for Netflix, which will be released on November 25th, and I did a very violent horror film called The Belko Experiment that's getting a nice release. It's an MGM film. We premiere at the Toronto Film Festival in just a couple of weeks, and then are hoping for a release sometime in the first half of next year, probably before Guardians. So,
Twitter, Facebook, website?
I'm at Sean Gunn on Twitter, at The Judge Gunn on Instagram. I'm going to be switching to a follow page on Facebook very soon.
But you're right at the now, max capacity?
Yeah, I'm at max capacity, and I'm just a regular guy.
Too many friends.
So I gotta switch that over. Yeah, I actually love social media. It's a nice way to keep in contact with the fans.
Sounds good. We'll follow you anywhere.
All right, man.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Again, if you have not subscribed to Comic Book Central on iTunes yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. Push pause, go subscribe, because that's where you're going to be getting not only these upcoming Terrificon episodes, but future episodes, one of which is going to feature an in-depth interview with Sean. Again, just saying. Mentioned some things that are coming up, some actors, some actresses that are coming up there. Got a little taste of it there. More coming your way with Sean Gunn in the weeks ahead. Stay tuned. Go subscribe. You get them all. All right, Guardians is months away, but just weeks away is the premiere of the television series Gotham. Season 3 of Gotham premieres on Fox September 19th. One of the featured guests at Terrificon this year was Cameron Bicondova. She portrays Selina Kyle on the show. She portrays a pre-Catwoman Selina Kyle, young Selina Kyle. I moderated the Q&A with Cameron at the show. I had my questions. The fans had their questions. Cameron gave us the lowdown on what it's like shooting Gotham, this serialized Batman origin story. And she gave us a little preview of what we can expect headed into season 3, including the appearance of a special someone in Selina's life. So you're going to want to listen for that. Check it out.
Our special guest today, she is Selina Kyle on Gotham. Will she be Catwoman now? Who knows? It's gonna. Cameron Bicondova is making her way up. Let's give her a big round of applause. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yep, happy to hear.
That's all.
She brought a buddy along with her too. So, if you have any questions for Stitch, I'm sure he'll be taking questions as well.
He's a little tired.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to Terrificon. This is your first Terrificon?
Yes.
Been to Connecticut?
No.
First time in Connecticut?
Yeah.
What have you been doing? Anything fun, or have you just been running Six Ways to Sunday?
Having fun doing, like, autographs and photo ops yesterday, and then sleeping and eating.
Sleeping and eating. Well, that's
that's
our favorite things to do. Look, I'm going to start with a question. We've got a few questions for you, then we'll turn over the eyes. I'm sure we've got a lot of Gotham fans in here today that are dying to ask you some questions. I'm sure you've been asked this question a million times, a million different ways. I'm going to see if there's a different way I can ask it. Any chance that you've seen the 1992 film Batman Returns?
Yes.
You have seen that?
Yes.
That's a great movie, isn't it?
It is a great movie.
Do you have any favorite characters in that movie?
I see where you're going here.
Did I ask it in a slightly different way than I think?
You kind of made a little road to lead there other than just being like,
that's what I do. Yeah. I think you have to address the elephant in the room. I mean, my goodness. Have you ever met Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
Okay. That's mind-blowing to me, because you would think at some point somebody would, get you guys in a room together and say hi or something.
It's weird, because I've gotten it since I was, like, 5 that I look like her. Sorry, it's my morning voice. I'm like, I've been told that I looked like her since I was like 5, but I had long hair like down to my butt, and I had no idea who Michelle Pfeiffer was. I was 5.
You were 5. No, yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can't really blame me for not knowing who she was.
You know cartoons, I'm sure.
Exactly. Like My Little SpongeBob, Fairly Odd Parents, those things. And then the older, like once I got this role, then I was like, whoa, because people, you know, would take pictures of me from scenes in the show, and then pictures of Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns movie, and I was like, whoa, that's creepy. It's like I'm reincarnated, but she's not even dead, she's still alive.
Thank goodness.
But yes, it's cool. She's beautiful. So it's really cool that people think I look like her.
Well, I mean, it's kind of uncanny, but with the casting, did they talk about that at all? I mean, was it completely coincidental, or did somebody just go like, "Boy, she really does look like Michelle Pfeiffer. Maybe we can sort of make this in that kind of world as if she grew up to be this character."
I'm not sure. I mean, Danny and Bruno didn't say anything to me from the get-go about it, but I thought that it was kind of like an afterthought. Like, they hired me, and then they were like, "Oh."
Oh, by the way.
Oh, wow, that's weird. Okay. Because I auditioned with my curly hair.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's pretty amazing, too. Well, let's go back a little bit to the beginning. We'll get to Gotham. We'll get to... And feel free to just spoil the entire next season. If you
okay,
want.
Great.
Just tell us everything about it.
I mean, I don't know anything. Like, I only know what Fox and Warner Brothers has put out there already.
There's so many writers in your contract, I'm sure you're not allowed to say anything, but we'll get to that. We'll
I literally talk. Know nothing. Like, I know nothing.
And that's the end of the panel. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We're done for today. So let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Just getting started, should I be like 5 years old, you mentioned? Is that when you, like, the whole dance thing, your interest in dance began? So you wanted to be a dancer, is that, like, how did you get started in that, and then how did that lead into acting?
Well, my parents put me in dance because there's a studio near their gym, and they needed me to have a hobby while they were working out.
Keep me busy?
Yeah, keep me busy. I'm five. My brain is everywhere. I need something to focus on. And at first, like for the first 6 months, because I started with ballet and hip-hop, and the first 6 months, I just sat in the corner for hip-hop, and I was like... But princess in ballet, you know.
You started with ballet and hip hop.
Mm-hmm, and I hated hip hop.
Okay, those are two radically different worlds.
Well, you need both.
Okay.
Ballet is the foundation.
I know nothing about that, so feel free to tell me.
Ballet is the foundation to everything. I mean, really, that's what started, and then, and I don't know exactly what decade in the. I don't know whether it was in the 80s or 90s that hip hop came about. I think it was earlier. But, hip hop was
way back in the olden days.
Hip hop was founded in New York, and so I don't know how that. I don't know why I keep ranting about that, but you need both. That's what you usually start with is ballet and hip hop, and then you start to get into jazz and tap and everything else. The variations of the two, and so I started with that, and I hated it, and then
you had, like all of it, all the dance.
I mean, I loved ballet because, you know, when you're a little girl and you're watching Disney movies, you want to be a princess, and a ballerina is the closest thing to a princess.
Okay.
You get to wear pink, you get to walk on
the
tippy toes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So it grew on me, and now I absolutely love it. And my dream, I always thought I was going to be a tour dancer. I thought my goal was to go on tour with, like, Usher, Justin Timberlake, J-Lo, like, those artists. So for me to be here right now and be on a show that's, you know, of the Batman franchise origin is insane to me, and it's
huge,
really cool.
Yeah, it's a huge show to get into. I mean, also, how did you transition from dance into the acting? Because this is a huge, what a huge show.
I just fell into it, honestly. Like, I did the show called America's Best Dance Crew with my friends. Our crew was called Eight Flavas. And we did this performance at this award show for agents, and then my first agent happened to be there. And so that's when that happened. And then everything just fell into place. The universe was just my homie. You know? So I got...
Great place at the right time.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. So how were you contacted about Gotham then? How did that...
Oh, it was on Breakdown. The audition was on Breakdown. A Breakdown is when they send out a description of a character and some sides, and...
So you're not getting a full script. You're getting, I mean, they're just like the like.
Yeah.
You don't even, did you even know the character, who the character
no,
was? Because sometimes it's vague. Like,
it's real vague.
Jane.
Well, I had a mock audition, and basically they lied to me and said that this girl that you're going up for, her name's Lucy, she's a street kid, she's 14, she's an orphan, fierce when cornered. And this actress must be good at cat movements. And my mom and I were reading this description. That sounds like Catwoman. That doesn't sound. And this is a pilot, so they're obviously being really secretive about it.
But did you know it was Gotham?
No.
Like, not
I
in
mean,
the
actually,
show.
I think I don't remember if I knew if it was goth. I think I just knew it as a pilot.
Okay.
And
just a character.
Just a character and a job, because I had been like auditioning for 2 years at this point. I was like getting nothing. I was like, are you kidding me? Okay, universe, you're my homie for a little bit, and then you just like drop out. That's not cool, universe. You know. But yeah, so I was just looking at this as a job, and I thought it was really cool because I could use my dance and my acting, and now I'm here.
Okay. Cool. Well, were you able to incorporate some of those dance moves, or, how did that help you in the audition process? Because it mentioned like a cat, it was mentioned. So did you do anything? Because you actually are a cat girl. Like, you have cats. You enjoy cats.
Love cats. Yeah, I do. We've had cats and dogs throughout my childhood, okay. But I've always been more of a cat person, because dogs, they're too
They're needy.
Look, I'm a dog guy. It's like, I love when you're sad and you want a pick-me-up, then just, like, go in a room full of puppies and you're set. But for me, that's too much energy sometimes. Like, I just need you to chill. So, yeah, I love all animals but cats. For my audition, I stalked my cat. At the time, I had Mr. G. Mr. G has since passed away. But, I was stalking my cat for 3 days. I would wake him up by clapping and seeing how he would react to that. I would, like, crawl behind him, see how he would move. And he loved me, but he was really irritated at me because of that.
You're freaking him out.
I was freaking him out. Because, again, cats like their space. And I
needed to
give him his space. And for 3 days straight, I did not give him his space. And I also looked up videos from Cat the Musical on YouTube.
Okay. So, when you went into the audition, did you do anything physical in the audition? Okay.
At the time I lived in the same apartment complex as one of my mentors, and she had roof access, so she had these, like, air conditioning vents on her roof and everything. So I came up with a concept, and I came up with movements based on my cat and Cat Musical's moves and my dance background, and I filmed it on my mentor's rooftop just in case they asked for a video, but then they ended up asking me to do it for them in my final audition, and in my choreography, I had jumped from one air conditioning vent to another, and so I just had them pull a chair for me, and I jumped off the chair.
Okay, and that got you in the role.
I mean, it was more than that.
At that point, they knew.
Oh, yeah, jump off a chair. Boom.
I'm assuming you had done some acting with the sides leading up to that. But, and when did you find out it was Selena Kyle?
When they told me that I got the job.
And they're like, it's Gotham, it's Batman.
Oh, yeah, you're Selena Kyle. And I was like, okay.
Did you know the character?
I knew Catwoman, and I knew that Catwoman was Selena Kyle, but that was it. I had no history of comic books or anything like that.
Okay, so you knew you were coming into a comic book project, and it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it was huge. It was, because I know everybody knows Batman, whether you like comic books or not. Everybody knows Batman, so I was freaking out. And I was like, wow, this is my first TV show. I'm like the new kid on the cast. Like, this is insane for this to be my first TV job, but I'm so grateful for it. This is so cool.
Very high profile gig. Now, the character itself, different than any other version that has come along. You're playing the younger, it's not even Catwoman yet. So, and you always ask individuals this, like, what was your homework? Did you go back through the comics? Kind of a tough thing to do, because when you're going back through, it's an adult version, it's Kyle, it's Catwoman. Mm-hmm. Were you able to go back through any of the comics and find anything that you could use for the character, or did you just want to stay away from that world altogether?
Initially, when I started reading the comic books and watching the movies and the TV show, I was looking for inspiration, but then I was like, wait, why am I looking for inspiration? I'm playing a totally different character than what this character in the comic books and movies and TV show is. Because if I started looking for inspiration and started using what inspired me from these other characters and these other portrayals, then I wouldn't be playing Selena Kyle as a teenager. I would be playing Catwoman, and that's not who she is. And so that's when I still read comic books for fun, but I don't look at it for inspiration in any way, because she's not there yet.
Yeah. How do you see the character? Because, again, so many different versions throughout the years. you see her, I mean, sometimes she's portrayed as heroic, sometimes she's portrayed as an anti-hero, sometimes she's played as straight-up villain.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on Gotham now, it's kind of all about the villains.
Yeah.
When you kind of look at it, because Batman ain't there yet, so
yeah, exactly.
He can't save the day yet. So it's like the rise of the villains. How do you see the character, maybe when you got the role,
mm-hmm.
and how do you see her now?
I see her the same as I did going into it. I mean, I think she's evolved in, you know, obviously maturity because she's becoming a young woman now. She's not a preteen. But I think the cool thing about Gotham, and I've always said this, was the humanity of the show. It's not black and white, and that's how life is. Life isn't black and white. There are 50 Shades of Grey. There are shades of gray.
That's not the show. If you haven't seen it yet,
yeah,
that's the show.
It's not that at all. But there are shades.
It's dark, but
yeah, there are shades between the black and white. And I think that that's what's cool about what our writers and our team of the show does is it shows the humanity that. Heroes aren't just heroes and villains aren't just villains. You know, good people have to do bad things sometimes to do the right thing, and so do the villains. The villains are good people. They gravitate towards the bad things before they do the good things. And for Selina, I've never seen her as a hero and I've never seen her as a villain. I've always seen her as a human being. And I think that it's the same thing for all characters, and so that's what I think about her.
I think it's a mark of a good villain, too, is that you find those motivations when they're just straight-up evil. Like maybe back in the day, that gets hard to play, especially over the course of a series.
Yeah.
But Robert Moore Taylor, he's
brilliant. I mean, everybody. It's so cool because, okay, so his little teaser. This past Thursday and Friday, we were all on set. We all happened to be in the same place at the same time, which never happens. And so we were all like a bunch of like best friends in class. Like production was telling us to be quiet. We're like, and the show is so dark. When you watch an episode, it's like so dark and grim. But on set, like Drew, he brings his guitar, so we're like singing. I'm not singing, but like they're like singing along, like singing country songs, rock songs. And then like me and Maggie are like making faces at each other at the other side of the room. And you know, it's like totally immature what we're doing. Not immature, but like fun, giddy stuff. And then
it's great because I met Robin Moore Taylor at one point, and he's like the nicest guy, and he's so soft spoken, and he was so hi, how are you?
Hi.
And I'm like, you terrify me. Like
Didn't you kill 20 people within the first season?
You're so twisted. It gets crazy. So let's start out to the audience. We got some questions, and then we'll repeat the question too as you go through because I know sometimes it gets hard in the back. To hear a little bit. So, who's got a question for Ms. Beacondo? We'll start right up in front here.
So, you kind of said that you still read comics for fun, so what comics do you like to read for fun?
The question is, what comics for fun?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest, I don't know the names of them.
Just say Batman and Detective.
But my mom tells me all the time, Cameron, I know you like reading the comic books, but you gotta remember the names so you can tell people what you read. Because then, the Catwoman series is Catwoman, and then there's one where she's like on a rooftop and she's like this. That's the cover I remember. I don't remember the visuals. I never remember the names.
Typically, if you just describe the cover, everybody in the audience is gonna know which comic it is, and they'll probably run downstairs and get it in five minutes
for you to sign it.
So go downstairs, get that one, take it to her table, she'll sign it for you, and then that's the most awesome comic ever. Then, next question.
Hi.
Right behind here. Yep.
There's a lot of physical activity in Gotham. How much of that do you actually get to do?
Okay, so stunts. So talking about the stunts in Gotham.
I have a stunt double. Her name's Lori, and she's the greatest person in the world. We actually work together in a lot of, you know, the stunts that I get to do to make it to where I can do them, because she knows, we both know that I want to do as much as possible since, you know, I want to be able to do what Selena would do and not have somebody else do it if I have the capability of doing it. But most of the time, production doesn't want me doing some of them because of legality issues, which kind of sucks. But it's cool. I still get to do them, some of them. But yeah.
Everyone wants to keep working. I mean, if you're hurt, they can't work on that scene for that day. So,
yeah, that's true. But I feel safer on set. Like, I was, okay, production doesn't even know this because I didn't want them thinking that I couldn't do anything. But between season one and season two, I was on hiatus. I was training at my parkour place, and my coach was like, okay, after like 2 hours of like learning new stuff, he was like, okay, we're going to do an obstacle course. So you're going to have to use the moves that I taught you, and you're going to like go around whatever obstacles I do, and you're going to use them. And I was like, I got this. And I literally just jumped off a mat, and then I was like, sprained my ankle, and it was swollen for like 3 weeks, and I had to go back to set in 2 weeks, and I was like, oh my god, I'm about to die, I can't do anything, and they were telling me to be careful because I'm going to do stunts, and now they're going to like not let me do anything ever again, and so I just didn't tell them that I was injured, and I just was fine.
So did you go down like right when it hit, you knew?
Oh yeah, I knew. Was I was
and
like,
you played it off?
Oh, no, I was, like, in pain.
Okay, so, well, I'm wondering how you kept it hidden if you're kind of, like, writhing on the floor, then.
No, well, no, when I sprained my ankle, I was in L.A. on hiatus, and when I went back to New York on set, I just had to wrap my, so what I did, there's, like, a thing where you walk around.
This is the acting part.
Yeah,
I mean,
this
yes.
is, like, dancer, not hurt, still gonna get paid, do the gig. And nobody's going to know that I'm injured. So I'm walking, trying my best to not limp. And I make sure I don't have my ankle wrapped because I'm not going to show them that. So I was wearing shoes and I walked around. And then once I got dressed in Selena's costume, that's when I wrapped my foot and then put my boot on. Nobody knew. So I stepped up. I was like, Lori, I sprained my ankle. She's like, what? Shh. My ankle's not sprained. I don't know anything.
Just a secret between the two of you, and now
dirty
we all know
secret.
About it too. Talk about some of the sets that we see on Gotham, because I know a lot of these shows. I mean, they're putting them out so fast, and there are some CGI moments and things on. But especially the last few episodes, I think of this past season, mm-hmm. really got to see like a lot of the Gotham street scenes and things opening up. Talk about working on the sets. Like, how big are the practical sets?
Oh, they're
kind of
huge.
Take us into that world a little bit.
The GCPD is literally two stories high.
They built the whole thing.
They built the whole thing.
Nice.
As big as it looks on TV, it's pretty much that big. Wow. And usually, you know, I learned this when I was dancing, like, on TV shows like American Idol and like The X Factor and everything. Those stages look huge, but when I went on those sets to work, they were tiny. It's like, we're supposed to dance on that? Are you kidding me? We made it work. But anyway, the sets on Gotham are literally that big. The GCPD is huge. I don't know what other sets.
Because I know we go like through the street scenes. I mean, there's like these. I mean, the cars are flipping over and exploding. Like, how many blood? Sometimes we see like they'll take blocks up. Like, how big are those street scenes? Or is a lot of it kind of CG?
Oh, like the car explosions. Those they actually
shoot
on location.
Yeah, they're climbing all over.
Yeah, they shoot on location for those kinds of things, and they block off like I don't know how many blocks. But that scene was shot on West Side, like in Harlem area, where there's much more space.
Okay. I don't know if it's like a back lot that they had blocked off, or they're actually going and taking up
the only
city
time,
blocks.
The only time we really use CGI is for like, I mean, I'm not an expertise on the CGI stuff, but
tell us all the technical things
that I know of. It's like fireflies, flames. They use CGI, like for the scene in season two where I was trying to burn the wall down, they had me just literally stand there and act like there was flames coming out, and then he had me stay there and freeze, and he used his like iPad thing that was this like thermal app, and he went around me to like basically traced my body and my shape, and then they just added in, so they did that for Firefly stuff, for Mr. Freeze's stuff. And then also for the rooftops, like the scenes where Selena and Bruce are jumping over the rooftops, we're on a roof and they just build these fake edge of the buildings and they put green screen between them. And they have a pad in the middle, so we jump from one roof to the pad to the other roof, and then they just kind of cut between them.
When you have the large sets like GCP and things like that, and you're able to actually work in a practical environment, mm-hmm. how does that help you as an actress too? Because some of these bigger movies, I mean, some of it's all green screen, and I think it gets tougher on the actors if they don't have really something to have. How does that impact you as an actress when you actually do have an environment to go into?
I mean, obviously, being on location in New York with the atmosphere and the vibe of the city definitely helps, but they do such a great job with the sets that they build. It's like, it's so easy for us to be in the environment that we're supposed to be, especially with the writing. It's like, they basically do all the work for us, and then all we have to do is go in front of the camera and do our thing.
And where are you shooting?
In New York.
Okay. Why did they choose not to? Because most shows are shot in L.A., I would think. Why did they choose to shoot?
Well, Gotham, L.A. isn't Gotham. Like, L.A. is not, no, they wouldn't be able. It's like the vibe of everything, the atmosphere, the architecture, everything about New York is Gotham. I mean, I see Gotham pizza everywhere. I'm like, maybe I should get some Gotham pizza.
I'm sure they would love, yeah, I'm sure if they put the picture up on the wall. So. Let's take another question.
Yeah.
All the way in the back.
Do you have an all-time favorite scene?
All-time favorite Gotham scene.
Oh, my God.
All-time favorite Gotham moment.
I have a couple of favorites. I mean, okay, my favorite moment was actually Thursday and Friday because we were all in the same place. Mm-hmm. But then I have to say my favorite... it's so hard.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I mean...
And not even necessarily something with you in it, but do you watch the show with some of the other actors? And then, because you don't get to see what Robin Lord Taylor's doing. You don't get to see what a lot of these people mm-hmm. are doing. Was there anything that you just watched and went, oh, whoa. You just went to a very strange place there.
I mean, I loved all the scenes that Cameron Monaghan was in. But then for me, I'd have to say the scenes with Michelle, who plays Bridget, I'd have to say those are pretty cool. I always loved doing those scenes with her because she's actually a really good friend of mine. And also because you don't get to see Selena be nice all the time. And to have Selena, to show that Selena is a normal teenager and she has a best friend, I'd have to say those were my favorite. But, I mean, she does so many cool scenes. I get to do so many cool scenes, it's really hard. But I hope that answers your question.
Very cool. In the I don't know if it was in the finale or close to the finale, where, yeah, you talked about the guns, and you have that really throwdown, that battle of coming, because you're trapped in the room. Basically, you're trapped in the room with her, with Firefly.
That scene, that one scene, took about, I think, 3 days to shoot. Just because there were so many different angles and things that were part of it. And you'd think that that would be a simple thing to shoot because there were only two people in it. But since the room was that set was freaking awesome. oh my gosh. Yeah, it was in Arkham or Indian Hill. You walk in and you think that this place was like somebody set this place on fire, but I accidentally touched the wall. Well, I didn't accidentally touch it, I think I did. I accidentally touched the wall, and it was just styrofoam. It was just silver styrofoam that was painted black. I was like, wow, guys, you make it look like it's freaking iron and it's styrofoam. How cool is that? So yeah, I always love finding those things.
Amazing production design. You mentioned Cameron Monaghan too. Mm-hmm. Coming back for 3 episodes.
Is that out?
I believe that is out.
Oh, it's out.
So I'm seeing head shaking. So yeah, is that something you're allowed to talk about now or not?
I guess yeah. Okay. I'm really excited about it. That's all I know.
Okay, and then something that you can tease about another character that might be coming onto the show? I'm told.
Yes. Selena gets to meet her mom this season, and I'm super excited about that. I have no idea who's playing her.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Sorry. I honestly don't know. I think, I assume they're looking right now, but I have no idea.
Okay, so that's something we can see earlier or later? Do you think we'll have to wait a little bit?
I think you have to wait.
Okay, it's not going to be at the premiere.
No.
Okay, so we'll wait a little bit later for that. More questions?
More questions. Right here on the right-hand side,
yep, with the glasses.
I was wondering if there are any specific actors that are practical jokers on the set or maybe make you laugh intentionally, unintentionally.
Funny
Maggie. She sent me a video of her cat pooping yesterday. So Maggie is one of them. I was like, are you kidding me? It was really traumatizing. Poor cat.
We love cats, but I don't know that we love them that much.
Like, give them some privacy, Maggie. So yeah, Maggie does. We do that to each other, actually. Not send our videos of our cats pooping, but we play jokes on each other, and then. Yeah, Drew and Donal are pretty funny people, too. We're all pretty funny in our own ways, I guess. But Maggie, yeah.
I guess you almost have to keep the set light on some level because you're talking about such dark things and such dark characters. You almost have to have some
I think we're just, like, cool people.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I was trying to be facetious about that. But, we're just naturally, like, we're all really happy people.
It's a great show. It seems like a laid-back cast. More questions? Right over here, Green Lantern.
Your character's body language is a lot different than yours. Does that require conscious effort, or do you just switch gears?
I just switch gears. The moment I put her outfit on, like, it's a totally different person. Because I would wear her stuff because she steals some really expensive things from people. But, that's it.
Catwoman t-shirt right over here.
It's no secret that Ivy's going to have a transformation this season. How do you think that will affect her relationship with Selena?
This is what we're referring to as there's another actress now playing the role of Ivy. So as an adult...
Yeah.
Poison Ivy, so she's going to be... So, first of all, how does that happen? Do we know how that happened, Jen?
It'll be explained.
Okay.
Yeah.
Early? Because that's going to be very strange.
I don't know. Okay. You got to watch it.
And then how's that going to... The question is, how does that impact her?
At first, Selena doesn't know that it's the Ivy that she's known this whole time. She just thinks that it's this woman who's acting like she knows her, but she's never seen her, before. Eventually, Selena does find out that it's the Ivy that she's known, and it's interesting because it hurts Selena, obviously, because Selena this whole time has felt like her friend died because she didn't do enough to protect her. And then to find out that her friend was actually lying to her this whole time and not telling her that she was alive and she was just a different being... It's a bit of a roller coaster, but I think it'll work out. I mean, they have to.
Big year for you this year. Speaking about past Catwomen, you actually got to meet a Catwoman.
I did.
One of our, look, I mean, I love all the different versions of Catwoman, but the original, you got to meet Julie Newmar.
I did.
This year. How amazing was that? And she even got, she gave you a gift too, right?
She gave me one of the, one of her original dolls. And I was like, I mean, she didn't even need to give me a doll. Just meeting her was insane as it was. But yeah, it was a surprise. I was on a talk show and, they just surprised me by bringing her on the show.
Wow.
And I was...
That's huge.
I was about to bawl my eyes out, and I couldn't because I had some makeup on that somebody did for me. If I had done it myself, I wouldn't have cared, but somebody did my makeup. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to ruin your makeup that you did on me. So.
Did she give you any sage wisdom, any advice moving forward, or even just as an actress in the industry? Because she's been around and has done everything.
Well, she asked me, she because they played a clip, and she was like, you wear flats? And I was like... Wait, what do you mean? She's like, shoes, you wear flats? And I was like, yeah, did you wear heels? She's like, yeah, they wouldn't let me wear flats. And I was like, oh. And then I thought about it, I was like, that's so true. So, I mean, maybe eventually Selena will go into that, you know, thing where I'll just have to rock some 5-inch heels and take some booty in 5-inch heels.
She did well back 50 years ago, so yeah, that had to have been great. Another question?
Yeah.
Right behind the end.
If you could just discard any character from the show, villain or hero, who would it be? Just totally forget that they're in the show altogether.
Forget a character.
I have never gotten a question like that.
I've never heard a question like that.
I don't think we could discard any character. I think, you know, I was asked this before too. Like, does it bother me that so many people are on the show? So many characters are in the show? And I think that's what makes Gotham special, the fact that there are so many characters and people that are part of Gotham, and because there are so many different stories that we could learn about and so many different people and origins that we can learn about. So I don't think we could forget about anyone, because each person, whether they know it or not, is related somehow, not blood related, but has a connection to each person. And I think that's really cool. So I don't think you could be able to discard anybody.
We want everybody to stay gainfully employed. You've got to keep the picture.
That's the plus, too. You always want to stay employed.
We got time for one more question right here. Yep.
With the news of Harley Quinn being added to a future season, how do you feel about the Harley Quinn character?
Wait, that was really?
Then one director said they would like to add Harley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be amazing. Harley Quinn is one of my favorite comic book characters, and I think that she'd be really great on the show. So, yeah, of course, Sirens.
You've got a few scripts. How many episodes have you shot already?
We are about to start shooting episode 6.
Episode 6. So can you give us just an overall kind of wrap up here with what's the kind of tone that you get? I mean, we don't want to give any spoilers or anything. What's the kind of tone you get just having shot several episodes moving into it? How would you describe the overall tone of the show, of this season?
I mean, I guess...
You got monsters. Monsters are on the loose.
The slogan, I think the slogan is still heroes will fall. So this entire season, the villains are going through some stuff, like usual. And then the heroes are actually going through some things as well. They're not being the heroes of the city anymore. They're actually having to deal with real life issues. And so I guess that would be the vibe that's going on, is struggle.
David Mazouz hasn't gotten in for any cape fittings yet or anything, has he?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he does it on the side.
He's out in the back costume or something.
Bruce Wayne doesn't really struggle that much, and I think that's why him and Selina have an interesting relationship, because she struggles all the time, and he doesn't really struggle at all.
That is a teaser for this coming up season. Season 3 of Gotham premieres September 19th. We're looking forward to that. You're going to be downstairs. You're going to be signing all day, taking pictures for the rest of the convention. So, Cameron Pietrangelo.
All right, there you have it, folks. My Q&A with Gotham's Cameron B. Condova, capping off a cavalcade of stars here on Comic Book Central today. But I am just getting started. This is just the first episode. Man, I'm telling you, all next week, I'm bringing you more amazing moments from Terrificon. My Q&As with Rick Hoberg, Bob Camp, Sam Jones, John Wesley Shipp. How are you going to hear it all? I told you. You know how to do it. Subscribe to the show in iTunes. Subscribe to Comic Book Central on iTunes or Stitcher. Boom, there you have it. Each and every episode, you get them automatically. They're all there. Like Comic Book Central on Facebook. I'm posting them there. Follow the show on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. I'm tweeting them there. The website, comicbookcentral.net. You can download or stream them there. Share and retweet on social media if you will. Don't keep this all to yourself. Share the Lair. Blueberry, the Lair is there as well if you like using that service. Don't forget, if you're in iTunes, leave a review. Man, 5 Terrificon episodes, 6 episodes of Comic Book Central in a little over a week. Man, let's light up iTunes with a ton of 5-star reviews, folks. You're getting the bonus plan plus this week. Man, come on, 5-star review this thing. That is also a huge way you can show your support for the show and help get it noticed by even more people. Share the episodes this week. They're going to be coming at you fast and furious. I hope you enjoy listening to them as much as I enjoy bringing them to you. I'm having fun. This is a blast. It's just getting started. See you in a few days. Until then, have a terrific time, Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Hey, look, I said we were going to be going live. What better way to kick things off than with Sam Jones, Flash Gordon? He's here at Terrificon. Sam, is this your first Facebook Live?
It is my very first Facebook Live. So,
okay.
Hello, live audience out there. Come on down to Terrificon.
This
Mohican Sun, Connecticut.
This is great. Anything can happen. I said anybody could show up. We've got the savior of the universe right here. We got a panel coming up Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't bought tickets for Sunday yet, you got to make sure if you're in the area, if you should get to the area.
Yeah.
Get tickets for this panel that's coming up on Sunday.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Come on down. It's Terrificon.
Yeah, come on. Get there. Get there right there. Okay. There you go. Come on.